Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, ZB2 X4Z OS Technical Preview. Today's teleconference will be recorded, will last approximately 60 minutes, and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn what's coming in DB2 X4Z OS to support your staff and your business. The speaker for today's teleconference is Jeff Johnston, Distinguished Engineer, DB2 for ZOS Development. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Jeff Johnston.
Thank you. This is Jeff Johnston. I'm from the DB2 development team from Silicon Valley Lab in San Jose, California. And my subject today is the DB2 for ZOS X technical preview. And with that, I will page through to page 3. And DB2 X is the next release of DB2 for ZOS. We consider it to be a balanced release, satisfying a lot of technical requirements across a broad range of categories. And my objective today is to give you some information about what those functions are, and hopefully convince you that it is indeed a balanced release and should satisfy requirements from a broad spectrum of customers. Page 4 kind of gives you a little bit of high-level information about our overall technical strategy in DB2 for ZOS development. And when I say a balanced release, we try to ship functions that satisfy requirements in a few different broad categories. And we split off the broad categories in 4 basic ways. And the first category is application enablement. And that's basically SQL functions that the application programmers need to continue providing more and more advanced capabilities, and also making the porting job easier from, you know, other distributed DBMSs to DB2 on ZOS. The second broad category is availability, scalability, performance, these kinds of things that are the hallmarks of System Z, and where we consider to have, you know, some pretty distinct technical advantages on the platform compared to other platforms. But we can't stand still on this technology. We need to continue pushing forward because we have a lot of customer requirements in these areas, and we need to continue expanding these capabilities. So things like data sharing and parallel sysplex, workload consolidation, scalability, eliminating all causes of outages, all these things are important requirements that we need to continue delivering on, and DB2X will do that. The third broad category is cost of ownership. And in the global economic downturn that we've all been living through over the last year and a half or so, this is becoming a bigger and bigger topic for many companies. From a technology perspective, this means that we need to deliver a function that, you know, consumes less resources and also, you know, reduces the burden of the people who have to manage and administer DB2. Because, you know, many people are finding that they're having to manage larger and larger, more complex environments with not necessarily a larger staff. And so what we'd like to do in the product is to do more things automatically that, you know, so that DB2 doesn't require as much care and feeding as it has in the past. Make things easier to manage, basically. And the fourth broad category is data warehousing capabilities, and this is something we put a fair amount of focus on in version 8 and version 9. We'll continue to enhance it in version 10. Chart 5 kind of breaks our function into some major focus areas that kind of span these 4 areas that I just mentioned. As I look at the functions in DB2X, really I start to think about, you know, what are the really key requirements that we're going after. These are 7 of the key requirements that I think are probably the top 7, and this is the way I've broken out the presentation. The first category is performance and reduced MIPS consumption. Secondly, scalability, more active threads and single DB2 regions. Third is continuous availability. Fourth, catalog contention reduction. Fifth, DBA and system program productivity. Sixth, focus area is advanced application functionality. And finally, seventh area is security advancements, and that's how I've broken out the presentation here, and we'll, as we go through it, we'll go through each of these categories. page 6 gives you kind of a timeline of what we're looking at here, and you know, we're not ready to announce anything yet with regards to DB2X, but we do want to give you some kind of rough time frames for planning purposes. And you know, in the last few releases of DB2, if you look backwards in time, we've been on about a 3-year release cycle. Version 7 went out in 2001, version 8 in 2004, version 9 in 2007. And, you know, if you do the math, you can see that we're targeting 2010 as our target date for DB2X. We have plans to start the beta program sometime early next year. And if things go well, then the release would be available sometimes toward the end of next year, 2010. But all this is yet to be determined. This is just, you know, rough planning information that I'm giving you at this point in time. And Chart 7 reiterates the point that we are, you know, still in development on this release, so things can and will change, as they do with any large development project. But Chart 8 gives you a kind of a one-chart summary of what I consider to be kind of the most important features of the release, again, broken out in these four major themes that we talked about before. And you can see that we've got major deliveries in each one of these themes. So you don't have to worry about reading these, and at this point in time, I'll go through these in more detail as we go through the upcoming slides. So the first major focus area in the release is performance, as I mentioned before. And if we go to Chart 10, you'll see that when we talk about performance being a really significant focus item, we're looking at many different things. Major thing being, when you migrate to this release, we expect lower CPU usage for a large variety of SQL workloads. You know, lower MIPS consumption when you migrate to this release. It's a major goal that we have in DB2X, and more focus on this, I think it's fair to say, in DB2X than any prior release of DB2 in recent memory. So we hope to support this goal that when you migrate to the release, you'll have better performance, lower CPU usage, lower overall MIPS usage, improved transaction times. As you look at scalability, virtual storage is the most common constraint for large customers. So we've done a major amount of work here in DB2X to allow you to increase the number of concurrent threads, concurrent active threads through single DB2 regions. And we'll talk more about that in a second. Going to Chart 11, looking at performance objectives, and if we kind of take it in the context of history of DB2 releases, you look back, you know, back to version 3 up through version 7 of DB2, we've always supported a performance goal of 0 to 5%, no more than 5% regression in terms of the path length. And this has been, you know, a very challenging thing for us to maintain, but we've considered to be very important over the years in order to you know, maintain and grow SQL performance. As the machines get faster and faster through the years, we've got to make sure that the path lengths in the SQL are not increasing over time or increasing at a very slow rate. And as you can imagine, this is a big challenge for a product the size and complexity of DB2. You know, as we add new functions and features into the releases, the path lengths just naturally grow over time, and we need to put a lot of focus on keeping those path lengths as lean and mean as possible. And so in our historical releases, it's always been 0 to 5%. And version 8 was a little more in terms of the performance regression because of the transition to 64-bit mainly, and also Unicode that added some path length into the SQL that we weren't able to get back as easily. So when most customers migrated to version 8, it was, I think, fair to say, a heavier performance migration than most other releases of DB2. But, you know, I mean, in most cases, the performance regression in terms of CPU path length was, you know, in the 5 to 10% range. So, it wasn't significant for a lot of customers. Other customers, it was harder to, you know, tune that, get it back. But version 8 was a little more challenging release than most releases and before it. Version 9, we made some pretty big strides in performance. And we were able to support a more aggressive performance goal in version 9 than previous releases, with most customers noticing when they migrate to version 9, the CPU is about the same for the SQL as compared to the previous release, version 8. So the SQL path lengths, on the balance, are more or less the same in version 9 as they were in version 8. And as we go out to DB2X now, you can see that our goals are much more aggressive than they have been in the past. We're expecting to see a CPU performance improvement in the vast majority of SQL statements. Of course, mileage is going to vary, and all the normal disclaimers will apply here, but we expect that, DB2X compared to previous releases of DB2, you'll notice performance improvements that you haven't noticed in prior releases. That's just regression performance. There'll obviously be more opportunities, more new features that are performance-related, that if you exploit those new features, you'll get even more performance improvement. But this is just assuming you don't change anything. All you do is migrate from one release to the next. This is what you should observe. So going to chart 12, some of the items that we've put into the release that are supporting this goal of performance improvement in DB2X, these are some of the more important ones. And these would be changes that you get for free, that you migrate, you don't have to do anything to get these improvements. So these are SQL runtime improved efficiencies. This is just streamlined processing some of our mainline SQL paths, that we're able to do some things more efficiently in DB2X than we've been able to do in the past. Parallel insert index update at insert. So this is a performance improvement for insert, where you have multiple indexes on the table. We can now do I/O parallelism on the index leaf pages and therefore get much improved insert elapsed time. Faster single row retrievals through open fetch close. This is giving singleton select performance for open fetch close by being able to chain those operations together. Insert improvements for universal table space. The universal table space was a new kind of table space that we introduced in version 9, and we're focusing mainly on that table space type for our insert performance in DB2X. But some of the insert performance improvements that we'll have in X will apply to other table space types as well. But insert performance is a big focus item in X, and we hope that when you migrate to this release, you'll observe improved insert performance. Blob streaming between DDF and the rest of DB2. This would be for faster fetching and inserting of lobs through your DDF applications. Work file span record support and memory enhancements for work files. So this is backing work files in memory without having to actually go to a work file table space. Just doing a fast in-memory version of work file for small sorts. And span records for larger joins. Index list prefetch, more robust access to indexes for scanning indexes for queries, where with our list prefetch capabilities now in DB2X, we can use information in the non-leaf portions of the index to fetch ahead on the leaf portions as we're scanning along leaf pages and do list prefetch to avoid synchronous I/O in the indexes. And we expect that'll be a pretty good performance improvement for a lot of different kinds of queries. SQLPL, if you make use of SQL stored procedures, there are a number of performance enhancements that we're planning in DB2X that pertain specifically to SQL stored procedures. And we expect there to be some pretty significant performance improvements there without any application changes necessary. High-performance DBATs, this would be for your database access threads, your DDF threads, to be able to exploit release deallocate bind option for those threads to get much improved performance in a lot of cases. Exploitation of solid-state disk. This would be exploiting solid-state disk and externalizing the knowledge of whether the object is using solid-state or whether it's using hard disk drives in the real-time statistics, and be able to exploit that in DB2 eventually for things like query optimizer cost estimations. Chart 13 then goes into some more performance enhancement we have in DB2X. These would be, no application change required to get the benefits here, but they would require some DDL or some bind changes. So inline lobs, if you're using lobs extensively in your applications, You might have cases where, you know, the lobs, most of them are small in size, and you have a few medium and a few big ones. But for the ones that are small, and maybe those are the majority of your lobs, you know, they're 1K, 2K, 4K, you know, maybe a few K in size, we can inline those in the actual relational row and get some pretty significant performance improvements by storing those inline in the row and be able to fetch those much faster, as opposed to today where we have to go out of line from the row and the DB2 table and have to go to the lob table space to get these small lobs. So inlining the lobs should provide some pretty significant performance speed-ups in a lot of cases, and also give you the side benefit of being able to compress those lobs when we store them inline in the rows. Define no for lobs in XML. Define no has been an option we've supported for indexes and table spaces for a while now, which is that you define the object, and at DDL time, we'll define the object in catalog, but we don't define the backing files for these objects until they're actually used. Now we extend that support to lob table spaces and to XML table spaces as well. Member cluster support for universal table space type. A member cluster is an option that we've supported for a while for fast data sharing insert. It's applicable for partition table spaces today. One of the inhibitors to customers converting partition table spaces to universal table space type would be the fact that we don't support member cluster for those in version 9. So we're removing that restriction now and supporting member cluster for fast data sharing inserts for universal table space types. Efficient caching of dynamic SQL statements with literals. We're planning on doing a substitution kind of technique where we'll take the literal statement, or the literal in the statement, and substitute a character in there so that we can cache it more effectively, so that as the statement comes through with different literal values, perhaps it's an identical statement except for the literal value changing. As you know, today we can't cache that efficiently today because every new literal value in the statement will cause, you know, a different statement to be used in the cache, and so we're not reusing the statements in the dynamic statement cache. In DB2X, we can substitute for that literal now and use the same statement in the cache over and over and get efficient caching reuse for those kinds of statements. Some buffer pool enhancements. Utilizing the Z10 1 megabyte page size support to get better performance. We've noticed this gives a fairly significant performance speed up when we're able to use the 1 megabyte page size. This note that this is a ZOS page size, it's not a DB2 page size. So DB2 and DB2X, we continue to support all the normal page sizes you're used to. But we can back some of these buffer pools, regardless of the DB2 page size, we can back them using the 1 megabyte page size in ZOS and get some performance improvements there. So we'll provide an option for that, DB2X. And a fully in-memory option that we're planning on supporting, which would be you can specify this attribute at the buffer pool level such that any object that maps to that buffer pool, we would read it completely into the buffer pool 100%. So that's 100% cache in the buffer pool. And we do that via prefetching mechanisms when you open the object for the first time. The physical opens. We'll prefetch the object into the buffer pool and pin it in memory, and now we can get some performance benefits by doing that. Hash access path. It's a new kind of access path for DB2. It might be familiar to some customers out there who have used IMS in the past. What we're doing here is exposing the hash access path to relational, I think for the first time, which would be primarily useful for things like, you know, primary key lookups, where you're just doing, you know, fast lookups based on a unique key value. For example, you know, select from the product table where product ID equals XXX, or select from the account table where account ID equals XXX. These kinds of SQL statements where the tables are primarily accessed via a unique key lookup, we can use a hashing mechanism to do much more efficient access for those kinds of SQL statements, as opposed to going through a binary tree lookup like we'd have to do today for those kinds of keys. So instead of traversing an index, you know, if you have a four-level index, we have four get pages, get the key and then find the RID and then go to the data page. It's four or five get pages. We can do a hash access and cut that down to one get page and do, you know, get a pretty significant performance speed up for those kinds of SQL statements. And index include columns, finally. This would be the ability to take a unique index and append columns to that unique key without it being part of the uniqueness constraint. So you can do things like getting rid of some indexes in the past where you've had a unique index and had to put up secondary indexes to support index-only access for other kinds of SQL. Now you can include those all in the unique index and therefore potentially get rid of some other indexes. Page 14 goes into some other performance enhancements. These would require rebind, some SQL paging performance enhancements, where if you have SQL that is paging through result sets, it's typically coded with some fairly complicated OR predicates. And to support those OR predicates, you need multiple indexes. Now we can support those predicates with a single index and get single index access and therefore get a pretty significant performance boost for those SQL statements. Inless performance enhancements, a number of enhancements related to the inless kinds of queries. Enhancements related to query parallelism, two things there. One would be improving the efficiency of parallelism. When we, in cases where we choose to use query parallelism, we can do so more efficiently now in DB2X. We can also, and the second thing would be extending the use of parallelism in cases where it's restricted today, remove some of those restrictions so that parallelism can be used in more places. Overall query performance, elapsed time benefits, more zip exploitation, all these kinds of benefits would accrue. More stage two predicates being pushed down to stage one. And then some more information in the DSN filter table to indicate stage one or screening predicates. More aggressive merge of views to avoid view materialization. And rebind enabling further SQL runtime improvements. You get rebinding the package would many times activate some other improvements that we have inside of DB2 after you rebind. Okay, so if we go on here and go to the scalability section here, it's another major focus area in DB2X. And most of this work is related to virtual storage. So if we look at large customers today, most of our large customers, their major constraint in terms of being able to run more and more threads in DB2 members or DB2 subsystems is virtual storage in the DBM1 editor space. And the constraint is that, you know, as you run, you know, hundreds or many hundreds of threads, eventually, because of the thread storage, the thread footprint in the DB2 address space, we fill up the DBM1 address space. Now, we've done some work in DB2 version 8 and version 9 with regards to 64-bit virtual addressing. But as of version 9, most of the thread storage still remains in the 31-bit region of our address space, and therefore we're limited to 2 gigabytes because of 31-bit addressing. And when we fill up that storage with the thread storage, we can't get any more threads in there. The end result is that many customers are finding that they have to, you know, monitor virtual storage pretty closely in DB2 and very carefully control the threads that come into and out of DB2 for virtual storage management so that you don't run out of storage. So the major work we've done here is to move in DB2X is moving the thread working storage above the bar, the vast majority of that storage above the bar. And so it goes from the 31-bit region to the 64-bit region. And the end result being you can run many more threads through single DB2 regions. So you don't have to carefully monitor the virtual storage anymore in DB2X, hopefully reducing your management costs for DB2. And maybe giving you some consolidation opportunities as well, in cases where you've had to grow your data sharing groups out fairly wide to run more and more concurrent work. You can consider, reducing to fewer DB2 members or even consolidating some LPARs. Chart 17 kind of gives a pictorial of this, where on the left side we have a situation as of DB2 version 8 or version 9, where we have, a sysplex and we have 3 LPARs in our sysplex, and we've got a fairly high-end data sharing group here where we're running, needing to run a couple of thousand, active threads at any given time. And so I've got a 6-member data sharing group here, DB2A through DB2F, each DB2 member able to run a few hundred active threads. And then at some point we run out of virtual storage and you got to add another member to contain more threads. But in this case, we've grown out to 6 members to run the work. And And so in some cases here, we've got, well, in all three of my LPARs, we've got two DB2 members on the LPAR. And, you know, in this particular case, I didn't want to necessarily put up LPAR 4, LPAR 5, LPAR 6 to support my additional members. So my three LPARs have multiple, two members in my data sharing group. Now, if I go to DB2X on the right-hand side, with the virtual storage relief that we're giving in this release, we can anticipate running, you know, a lot more threads through a single DB2 member. In this particular case, I'm depicting as, you know, five times as many threads in each DB2 member. This is active threads. So each member now runs, you know, instead of a few hundred, maybe a couple thousand threads, and we're able to consolidate from six members down to three members and actually run, you know, more threads through three members than I was able to do in six members in previous releases of DB2. So you get more threads through DB2 image and the potential for some consolidation here, some storage savings and some MIP savings as a result. Chart 18 talks about some other system scaling improvements. Basic system design tells you that, you know, when you remove one constraint, the next wave of constraints will emerge. So, you know, as we remove virtual storage as the constraint, we move, you know, run more and more concurrent threads through a single DB2 image. Certain latches in DB2 are likely to become hot and other serialization contention points in the engine. So we've done a lot of work in DB2X to remove those latch contention points. We have a new option in DB2X for better concurrency between readers and updaters. It's a currently committed option so that readers no longer have to wait for updaters to commit. But to return committed data now, they can just, you know, evaluate the last committed version of the row. Eliminating UT serial lock as you run lots and lots of concurrent utilities in DB2. In DB2, the UT serial lock is a lock that can become a bottleneck. And we're removing that lock in DB2X, with the end result being we anticipate, you know, you'll be able to run many, many more concurrent utilities as a result. Exploitation of 64-bit common. So we plan to exploit DB2X 64-bit common storage. You know, you're familiar with the virtual storage layout in ZOS, and you know that there's an extended common area. It's 31-bit addressable. But, you know, as we start contemplating running, you know, many, many more threads in single DB2 regions, we do have a small thread footprint in ECSA, and we don't want that to become a constraint. So in order to avoid ECSA becoming a constraint in the future, we're removing some of that thread storage up into the 64-bit common storage area, moving out of ECSA. DDL and bind. So many customers we talk to want to do, you know, concurrent bind activities in DB2, and they notice that these concurrent bind jobs can sometimes hit contention. As we do analysis on these jobs, it boils down to a few catalog tables in DB2 that have links in them, and therefore we can't get fine-grained concurrency on these tables. So in DB2X, we are removing those links, and we will support much finer granularity, much more concurrency. The end result being you can do more binds in parallel, more DDL, more preparers in parallel without hitting contention between these various concurrent activities. SP201, 64-bit limit on that catalog table space can become a concern, especially if you're using the package stability enhancements. We're storing more versions of the package in this table. We're removing that 64-gigabyte constraint in DB2X. And we do have a PTF available in version 8, version 9 to allow you to compress SPT01 if you have that immediate concern in version 8 or version 9. And then lower overhead for very large buffer pools. And as we contemplate utilizing, you know, the very large memories that are available on the Z10 machines and going forward in time, you know, you can start contemplating hundreds of gigabytes or, you know, even terabyte main memory sizes and start contemplating very, very large buffer pools, you know, tens of gigabytes, hundreds of gigabytes, even terabyte-sized buffer pools. You know, that's hard to contemplate in many cases today, but, you know, maybe in the not-too-distant future, it wouldn't be an impossibility. And so we want to position ourselves to support very, very large buffer pool sizes, and there's some things we did in DB2X related to very large buffer pool sizes that will enable extremely large buffer pools. Okay, continuous availability is another primary focus point in DB2X, and chart 20 shows some of the things we're doing on that front. We've done some major work in DB2X related to online schema change, and that's a technology, as you know, that we introduced back in version 8, and we enhanced it in version 9, and we got some major enhancements here in DB2X. And the idea here is that we allow you to alter many of the attributes that today would cause you to have to, you know, unload, drop, recreate, and reload kinds of things, which are obviously very highly disruptive and to be avoided at all costs. So we want to allow you to, you know, avoid those scenarios and instead allow you to alter these attributes online. And so things like page size, DS size, seg size, member cluster, those can now be altered in DB2X, and as well as table space type, so you can convert from one table space type to another, primarily two universal table spaces. So we introduced the universal table space type in version 9, but converting to a universal table space in version 9 is somewhat cumbersome because you've got to go through this unload-reload scenario to do that. Version X will give you a much easier way to do those conversions. So you can you do the alter statement to alter one of these attributes and becomes a pending DDL change in the catalog. And then to materialize that DDL change, you would run an online reorg. And the pending DDL change now is materialized, and the change becomes permanent at that point in time. And there's ability to drop the pending DDL changes as well if you change your mind after doing the alter statement. Numerous enhancements related to online reorgs. Online reorg of LOBs being one of those, it's been kind of a long-standing requirement. And for system programmers out there, online add of active log has been a requirement that we've been tracking and delivering here in DB2X now to allow you to add an active log with a command instead of having to bounce DB2 to do that. Chart 21 goes into some other utilities enhancements that are related to availability. The reorg shell will change for LOBs. Numerous other online reorg enhancements. Shareable change for all catalog directory objects now, which is a big thing for a lot of shops. The object to cancel blocking threads, so if you get to a switch phase of a long-running online reorg and it can't get through because of a blocking claimer, maybe that claimer is a long-running reader, for example, that isn't committing, you now have the option to cancel that blocker to get him out of the way so that the switch phase would complete. So that option is available now. Faster switch phase. So numerous things we've done to speed up the switch phase of the online reorg. Online are allowing disjoint partition ranges. So if I want to reorg partitions 5, 15, 22, and 37, you can do that now with a single reorg job. Permitting movement of rows between partitions when lob columns exist. So that's important in being able to use the reorg rebalance. When lob columns exist, today that's a restriction. If a lob column exists on a partition table space, you can't use the rebalance option because we can't move a lob from one partition to another. Well, that restriction is removed now. And also allowing the discard to delete the associated lob values. And then some better messages and progress message to estimate the length of the various reorg phases and time to completion. Chart 22 goes into some more utilities enhancements, support of spanned records for load and for unload of lob data, performance enhancements for file reference variables for load and unload, and then extending the support for UTF-16. And chart 23 has yet more utility improvements, copy change limit performance improvement, data set level flash copy option. We have... we introduced flash copy for volume level copies in version 8 with the backup system utility. Now in version X, we have data set level options to do flash copy at the data set level for, you know, copy of a particular database object's copy utility or inline copies with reorgs and run stats, for example, or, you know, to do faster inline copies. Recover back to a log point. So instead of, you know, having to lay down an image copy and rolling forward do point-in-time recoveries, maybe it would be faster to roll backwards to a log point. So if I want to recover to 5 minutes ago, for example, it's probably faster to just go backwards as opposed to laying down yesterday's image copy and rolling forward in the log. report recovery, support for system-level backups. That's important for customers that use the backup system utilities today. Modify recovery, some significant performance improvements with Modify. And then run stats enhancements to support the auto statistics function in DB2 version X, which I will tell you more about in a second. The next major focus area in the release, reduced catalog contention. And we talked about this a little bit already. Chart 25 goes into a little more detail here, removing the links from catalog and directory will allow us to get better concurrency. It also has a side benefit of getting rid of DS1 checker. So you know, those of us who have known to grow love the DS1 checker over the years, you know, we no longer have to worry about that utility. It's no longer needed because the links are gone in the catalog now. Row-level lock-ins enabled for the catalog and directory for the better concurrency. And we expect that you'll get much better concurrency with bind and prepare and DDL as a result. Chart 26 shows a few other enhancements related to the catalog. We allow partition by growth for numerous catalog objects. SPT01 specifically to grow beyond 64 gigabytes. DB2 managed catalog and directory data sets that should allow to ease the administration and management burden of the DB2 catalog. If you need to add a new data set, for example, you no longer need to do that manually, but converting DB2 managed, that can be handled automatically. New CLOB columns for storing SQL statements. So today, if it's a long SQL statement, it'll span multiple rows in our catalog. Instead, we'll store the SQL statement in a character blob, make that easier to manage and retrieve. Converting syscopy from EBCDIC to Unicode and online reorgs enabled for all catalog and directory objects. Advanced application functionality is the next major focus area in DB2X. So along this line, chart 28 shows you some of the functions here. Allowing non-null default values for lobs when you inline the lob. It's been a requirement for a while to be able to specify a default value for a lob column. Well, now with inline lobs, you can do that. You can support a default value for the lob column. Loading and unloading of tables with lobs becomes easier and faster. Last committed locking semantics, talked about that briefly before. It's actually called currently committed, and it allows readers to avoid having to wait for locks that are held by updaters and still return fully committed transactional queries. So it's not a dirty read. It's fully ANSI standard transactional queries, you know, using cursor stability read semantics that we have today. But today, if you have a cursor stability reader and he comes in and he wants to, you know, evaluate some rows that currently are locked by in-flight updaters, the cursor stability reader will wait for that lock. So the currently committed support gives us a way to avoid having to wait for those locks and instead evaluate the last committed version page or the row. Implicit casting. This just allows for easier casting between numeric and string data types. It's especially important for applications that are developed on distributed platforms, potentially for other DBMSs out there, and easier ports to DB2 for those applications, for those application programmers who are used to dealing with distributed databases and the looser typing. Timestamp of time zone is a new data type, handy for tables that have data from multiple time zones. Greater timestamp precision, going from microsecond precision that we support today all the way down to picoseconds. So that's six additional orders of magnitude of precision that are supported. And then moving average functions, which are handy aggregate functions for aggregation functions for OLAP applications. Chart 29 has other application-related enhancements, SQLPL in scalar and table UDFs, should be handy for things like parameterized views. 64-bit ODBC support for those of you running ODBC applications on ZOS. Some of those applications might have 64-bit requirements. There aren't many of those out there, but there are a few. So we have a requirement to enhance the ODBC driver that we provide on ZOS to support 64-bit ODBC apps on ZOS. This is being rolled back to version 9 as well. A special null indicator for insert statements. This is just an easier way for application programmers to code up an insert statement so that it, you know, they can handle the various permutations, combinations of input variables with one insert statement, instead of having to code up multiple kinds of insert statements depending on what kind of input they get. And then allowing caching of dynamic statements with literals, as I mentioned before. And chart 30 mentioned some of the XML-related enhancements we have in the release. XML data type was introduced in version 9, major new technology. So as you would expect, the follow-on release has a number of enhancements. So version X will support things like schema validation in the engine, for performance and usability for schema validation, binary XML exchange for better performance, XML multi-versioning, allowing easier update of subparts of XML documents, better handling of the XML data type for stored procedures and UDFs and triggers, better index matching with the date and timestamp types in XML, and then the check XML utility. And chart 31 talks about temporal data, and this is a major new application function that we plan on providing in DB2X. We're pretty excited about this one. We think it's going to be applicable to a lot of applications, because a lot of applications out there have to deal with, you know, time and, you know, how rows change over time. And so by moving some of that functionality from the application into DB2, we think application programming can become a lot easier, and we can save a lot of application logic by pushing some of those smarts into DB2. There's really two things with the notion of time. One is that you can think of various business objects, business entities, like a product warranty, for example, that is valid through course of time. And maybe you have to update the attributes of the product warranty for a specific period of time. You know, for example, maybe 1 month the customer upgraded the warranty coverage to premier coverage. And so today that all that has to be managed in the application with some pretty, you know, complex logic. But we can make DB2 become time sensitive and do the right things with respect to the time dimension. So if I have a row in my table, my warranty table that represents a product warranty for a given customer, and I want to update that warranty coverage for a given time period, DB2 can do the right thing with respect to the time dimension. And, you know, for example, if I have a warranty that spans 2 years from, you know, beginning of 2007 to the end of 2009, and maybe I want to update that warranty coverage for a specific month, I can do that now with an easy update statement, and DB2 can do the right thing and split that row into three different time columns, right? One would be, you know, the old warranty coverage for the beginning of 2007 through June of 2009, the new warranty coverage from June 2009 to July 2009, then the old warranty coverage back, you know, July 2009 back to the end of 2009. So DB2 becomes aware of the time dimension, and we can support this notion of business time now, where these business entities in the table are managed by DB2 with respect to the time dimension. And we can support a unique key that's temporally aware, so that a warranty ID is unique for a given time period, but it might be replicated, you know, across time. So these kinds of things, where business time is now managed by DB2 and becomes, and DB2 does the right thing. And then system time is the second notion, where this is basically tracking history. So as things change through time, DB2 can keep track of the history of how data looked before it was changed. So as rows get deleted and updated in the DB2 tables, we can remember what they used to look like and the time at which those updates happened and who did those updates and keep track of that history. And so when we have this history now, you know, you can do interesting things like query the history and submit SQL to say, show me what this data looked like, you know, at 12 o'clock on June 21st, 2009, for example. Chart 32 gives you kind of a pictorial, a picture of, you know, what the history table would look like. You know, as data gets changed in the current table, we would synchronously reflect what the data used to look like in the history table. And that's done synchronously as part of the unit recovery that updated the current table. And then you can access that with historical queries. That's useful for a lot of auditing kinds of applications. And chart 33 shows you an example of the business timing, right, where we do an update. And, you know, we split a policy, for example. It might be an insurance policy, it might be a warranty, whatever it might be, where the coverage is changed for a specific time period, and DB2 updates the row in the right way with respect to the time dimension. Okay, chart 34 now. We move to the focus area of DBACE and system programmer productivity, you know, trying to manage more with less, trying to have DB2 do more of the, you know, care and feedings so that people don't have to do as much of this. Chart 35 looks at one of the areas where, you know, a lot of the DBAs out there have to spend a lot of time and effort today, which is query monitoring and query performance tuning. And we want to make that job easier. So we want to allow that to happen both for static and dynamic SQL. And one of the things we'd like to be able to do is to be able to, you know, harden those access paths and make it easier to lock down access paths as you rebind or re-prepare static or dynamic SQL statements, make it more manageable. And when we introduced the package stability in version 9 for static, we'd like to extend that support to dynamic so as we prepare statements, we can harden them in an access path repository and remember what that access path was. The next time we prepare, instead of going through a whole new access path selection, we can just simply refresh the prepared statement as we had it before, and we can allow you to do things like lock down those access paths so we get more stability and control with dynamic SQL. And things like managing hints, you know, be able to manage hints better at the statement level, to apply certain optimizers, EPARMs at the statement level, these first statement bind options, things like this, to get more granularity and management control of the statements. Safe query optimization is a technology we're planning on delivering in DB2X to introduce the notion of reliability in the access path selection choices. So that maybe, you know, an access path that looks really good to the optimizer but might be judged to be more risky wouldn't be considered as heavily as an access path that's almost as good but is much less risky, much more stable. And so the optimizer might choose something that is maybe not the ultimate, but is, you know, almost as good and a lot less risky, and just, you know, get more stability, more reliability in the access path selection, especially in cases where the statistics might be not as good as they should be. RIDpool overflow to work files is another runtime enhancement that we have to avoid table space scans in some cases today, where if we run out of RIDpools, we resort to table space scans, and we can avoid that now in DB2X. Page 36 identifies some other areas where, you know, people are having to spend a lot of administration time. One area is statistics collection and run stats. What we'd like to do with our auto stats collection feature in DB2X is to remove the need to have to, you know, manage and run stats. Instead, have the system do that automatically for you. This would be a way to set up certain policies in DB2 and to set up the automation that would allow us to track and maintain statistics and schedule the statistics automatically based on the query performance and the observations of the performance over time. Compressing on the fly, to be able to build compression dictionaries on the fly during insert, to avoid having to run a utility to do that. Timeout and deadlock diagnostics, to drill that down to back to the individual SQL statement level. Today, as we're diagnosing deadlock or timeout problems in DB2, sometimes it's hard to tie that back to the SQL statement. And so we want to provide more granularity there to do that. So the IFC IDs and the console messages are enhanced to give you better, more granular diagnostics there. Automatic configuration of IBM-supplied user-defined functions and stored procedures. Access path stability, which we talked about, reduced need for reorg, and then allow tailoring of the DSN DECP of the name. So DECP no longer has to be called DSN DECP, but instead you can call it something different. And that can alleviate some of the step live issues you might have today for your dozens of DB2 environments where every DB2 has to have something called DSN HDECP. Now you can tailor it for each specific DB2, and that might give you some management advantages. Chart 37, some other things that we're doing here. Checkpoint intervals based both on time and number of log records. Running must-complete backout on preemptible SRBs, which might be handy for some test systems today where you might only have a single CP on those LPARs. Identify unused packages, give you the opportunity to drop those packages that aren't actually used. Statement-level monitoring, managing threads based on the application basis instead of, at a system level, managing things like max debit or max number of connections to push down that granularity, manage it at the application level. And then finally, the last big focus area here is security. And chart 39 shows you some of the areas, some of the enhancements in DB2X related to security. More granular authorities. So to do things like sysadm or database administration privileges without data access privileges. That's one of the things that auditors get excited about sometimes. And so we want to provide the granularity in the DB2 authorization scheme to allow you to have admin privileges without necessarily having the data access privileges, or things to do like to do explains without the authority to actually execute the privilege, or to do explain only, where I bind a package and just get the explain output, but actually going through the actual bind of the package. And then auditing of privileged users, doing some additional, more sophisticated and more granular auditing capabilities by establishing an audit policy, and to allow you to do things like auditing, certain privileged user IDs like DBAdm, for example. As of queries that we talked about, and then fine-grained access control, do things like credit card masking, where I put, when I define the column, you can put a case statement in that column definition to say that, when the column is accessed by a certain privileged user, they can see the entire credit card number. But if anybody else that comes in, they would see the credit card number masked out with exits. Chart 40 goes into some planning details about DB2X release. We're planning on providing the three modes, conversion mode, enable new function mode, and new function mode, as we had in version 8 and version 9. For all prerequisites, there's US 1.10. The catalog is DB2 managed now and requires DFSMS for the catalog. DB2.9 for ZOS, and Z990 class machines or above. And then things to be aware of in terms of deprecated features, private protocol is no longer supported in DB2X. So you got to make sure to get rid of private protocol before migrating to this release. We provided some tools to help you with that. Old plans and packages that were bound on version 5 or before, we'd force a rebind of those in DB2X. And plans containing DBRMs bound directly into plans, we're removing support for that in DB2X and requiring packages. And then you can see some other deprecated features there, but I think the three major ones are the first three there that you need to be aware of. There are other ones there as well for you to read and be aware of. And so that gets us to the end of the presentation. I hope this was useful for you and gave you some a decent overview of what we're planning for this release and give you enough information to begin planning for it. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. You may cast your vote at this time. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Please cast your vote at this time. Question 3. What version of DB2 for ZOS are you currently using? If V9, press star 1. If V8, press star 2. If V7 or below, press star 3. Please cast your vote at this time. Question 4. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Please cast your vote at this time. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. At this time, I will turn the call over to our speaker while we wait for questions.
Thank you. This is Jeff again, and I hope that this information on DB2X was useful to you. We're very excited about this release in DB2 development. We think it satisfies a lot of major customer requirements, and I hope that's true in your case as well. So if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, sir. The first question comes from Jim Drew. You may ask your question.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you for a great presentation. When do we look at, or can we look at DB2X becoming GA?
It's targeted for GA towards the end of next year in 2010. Obviously, you know, there's no announcement yet and there's no date set at this time, but if things go according to plan, that's where we think it'll hit.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The next question comes from Jeff Crum. You may ask your question.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for the presentation. I had a question about the catalog maintenance job. We recently upgraded to version 9, and we have a 12-way data sharing. and we had some issues getting a hold of the catalog to do the actual migration, even after moving the customer traffic, and we had to actually stop all of DDF and just to get access. My question is, do you plan on making any enhancements or changes to the CatMate job to make that concurrency easier? Or if not, can I suggest some and talk to you later about it?
Yeah, I'd definitely be interested in talking to you more about finding out the details, because the catalog migration job is designed to be concurrent. I mean, obviously it does some, you know, fairly major structural change to the catalog at times and requires serialization to do that. And so if you have work that's running concurrently, you know, it can hit contention with the other work, but it's designed to get the locks it needs and to run concurrently. And yes, we are putting a lot of focus on this in DB2X. We regard that as an important requirement, especially for data sharing environments, to be able to migrate the catalog in a concurrent way.
Okay, great. And I know two things we would like to see are something in the job to see where it's at in terms of the migration and also some sort of restartability, if that's possible.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
The next question comes from Prasanna Raghavan. You may ask your question.
Hey, Jeff. It was an excellent presentation. My question is on FastSwitch Reorg. I'm a PeopleSoft DBA, and currently our table spaces have hundreds of tables and thousands of indexes. So the switch phase takes a long time, and so the online reorg doesn't help much, really. So is there any improvements on making the switch phase faster and releasing the logs of the indexes faster when the switch happens?
Yes, we're doing some work in DB2X on the switch phase to make it faster. We don't have performance measurements yet. It's still too early for that. But we expect there to be some pretty good speed-ups in the switch phase in DB2X. Now, what's not changing in DB2X is that the online reorg would still require a switch, and when it does the switch, it still does the drains, you know, and so there still is some disruption, you know, during the switch phase to get the drains in to do the switch. That's still there. But then when the switch phase is executed, we expect it to be faster in DB2X. So, you know, once the drain is obtained, we expect the switch to occur faster and the drain to be released faster. So it's, you know, less disruptive to other work that's running in the system.
Okay, but it's going to take all the indexes and all the table spaces concurrently, and it's going to release it concurrently, or it's going to do a batch at a time?
Yes, so it would, for indexes, we can do the indexes in parallel in terms of the build phases. And
I was talking about the switch phase, because that's where we get stuck, where when it, even though there's like five indexes are done, like 99 indexes which are still not done.
Right.
And then it requires everything to happen perfectly, otherwise it just there takes a long time. And if we are using one index of the old table space, still the customer waits. So.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're putting some focus on this in X to make that switch happen faster. It would be applicable for the indexes as well as the table space. And the, you know, the serialization is still obtained the same way during the switch phase.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question comes from Joe Geller. You may ask your question.
Hi, Jeff. I have two questions. First one's about temporal update example on slide 33. The change was from March 1st to March 31st, but the way the rows show, there are now two rows in effect on March 1st and two rows in effect on March 31st. Shouldn't the before and after be adjusted outside the range of the update?
Yeah, the idea is that there's no overlaps in the time. So when the rows split for the temporal updates, there would be no overlaps. And in this particular case, you know, I had a row that spanned in time from January to December, January 1st to December 31st, and I want to update a period of time, you know, in March, right? So in this particular example on page 33, the row would now split into three rows, with the first row going from January 1st to March 1st. Let's see, is that right? Yeah, okay. And then the second row now going from March 1st to March 31st, third row going from March 31st to December. I think that's right. And
but then on March 1st, both of the first and the second row are in effect.
Yeah, so the start time is inclusive and the end time is exclusive.
Okay.
So that way, you know, we don't get any overlaps, but that's the protocol that we're enforcing here, that, you know, to avoid there being any time overlaps.
Okay, so the end time is exclusive.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, good. Could you describe a little bit the difference in a hash index versus the new version 9 random index?
Yeah, the hash index is not actually an index. It's a new table space type. So when you convert a table space to hash, we no longer would, you specify a hash key, basically. And whenever you do a lookup based on that key, we would now use a hash to look up directly into the data without using any index at all. Whereas the random index that you mentioned, it's a normal index B-tree. And what we do for the random indexes is we just randomize, we scramble the key before we store it into the index. And so you end up with, I can't remember now when we introduced that option, either version 8 or version 9, it's starting to run together. But I think it was either one, I don't recall now. But when you specify that option, before we insert the key into the index, we scramble it and then put it into the index scrambled. So you kind of lose ordering of the index. But what you do avoid is hot spots in the index if you have like a sequential key insert pattern. The randomized index can avoid you hitting a hot spot there.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Hari Shamgudasan. You may ask your question.
Jeff, on the page where you were talking about online schema changes, in talking about doing an alter and having the actual sort of actual implementation occur with a reorg, will it now be the case that you'll be able to do the alter without getting any locks or drains on the objects involved? You know, so in other words, you'll be able to do your alter even though a bunch of threads are using release deallocate on the object, or will you still have to worry about concurrency of those alters with that particular workload? And then a second question is in a given alter, are you able to change multiple things in the same alter statement, such as, you know, seg size, DS size, you know, the partitioning, all in one statement?
Okay. For your first question, the answer is yes, we expect those alters to be able to break into release deallocate. They will not, those kinds of alters that become pending alters that we're talking about here in version X do not do any drains. They would obviously get some locks in the catalog to, you know, insert the new pending alters into the catalog, but we don't expect there to be any problems with breaking into release deallocate threads or any other kind of thread. So it should be a very concurrent kind of alter.
Good.
And regarding your second question, yes, you can do multiple attributes altered. You know, for whether it's supported or not in a single alter statement, I'm not exactly sure. I have to go back and check. But you could do, for example, if you wanted to alter both the DS size and the page size, you could do both of those alters, and they both become pending alters, and then you can materialize them with a single online reorg.
Good. Thank you.
Sure.
The next question comes from Justin Bendick. You may ask your question.
Sorry, yes. I'm wondering what XML multi-versioning is. Hello?
The XML multi-versioning support?
Yeah.
Let's see. The short description, I'm not an expert on XML by any stretch of the imagination, but the short description I have here is that during the execution of an SQL statement, a row of an XML column can be kept in a work file, and the row in the work file does not contain the actual XML document. Instead, the information needed for DB2 to retrieve the XML document from the XML table is cached in the work file. The problem occurs if the XML document and the XML table is deleted or updated. When the row in the work file is fetched, DB2 can't find the expected XML document in the XML table, and the statement fails with an error SQL code. So it's a new... DB2 can keep track of multiple versions of an XML document as it gets updated, which can improve the reliability of fetching XML. I think that's basically the short description of it. Apparently, there's some restrictions today on that we don't keep multiple versions of the document, which makes it more difficult to fetch the XML document. Details there, I'm not exactly sure. I'd have to go back and check. Sorry about that.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from George Heimer. You may ask your question.
Hello. In the details at the end, it said that the probable details are that you, to go to DB2X, you need to be at DB2 version 9 for ZOS in new function mode. My question is migration possible from DB2 version 8 in new function mode?
That is something we are looking at. We plan to support that, actually, to be able to migrate from version 8, but at this point it's still too early to be able to, commit on that one. So it's something that we'd like to support, and we're planning on it, but it's still too early to commit on it. We're still testing it, and there might be some showstoppers that we don't know about, but just to give you some planning info at this point, it's something that we hope to be able to support.
Okay, so we should probably know soon, or?
Yeah, as we get out toward the beta and we, get some customer validation on it, we'd be in a better position to make some public statements about it and get some more commitment around it.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Sure.
The next question comes from Earl Dugan. You may ask your question.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. Great presentation, Jeff. One question I had is, where the plans are being changed so that you can no longer have DBRNs, they have to have packages, is there going to be a conversion utility or anything similar to that DSN TP2 for the protocols?
Yeah, we'll give you some support in tracking those down. There's SQL you can issue against the catalog to track that down. If you migrate to DB2X and there are DBRMs bound directly into plans, we'll do an auto rebind in DB2X, the system generated plan name. But we plan, we want to give you assistance in tracking that down in your DB2 version 8 and version 9 systems. So there's SQL that you can run to do that.
Okay. My second question is that in DB2.9, you added the ability to do an alter index. In DB2X or beyond, is there going to be the ability, I've had this question come up, to do an alter table, to change the table name?
There's rename table support that we have already today.
When you say by being able to rename the table name itself?
I believe so. I think we've had that for a while, right?
I'll have to check. I know it's come up, and normally you have to drop and recreate it to change the name of the table, so.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and check it as well. I thought this was something that we delivered in version 8, but.
And the last one is just a comment. A few years ago, I went to the DB2 conference, and Roger Miller said after the debacle of trying to do that DB2 5 to 7 conversion, he said that was the last time that they were going to ever do it. It's just interesting. You said you guys are looking at that. That's all.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for sure. So.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The next question comes from Ralph Marks. You may ask your question.
Thank you, Jeff, for this presentation. I want to know if we have in version X the possibility to drop members out of the storage, out of the data sharing group.
Yes, we plan on providing that. We're working on a utility function to be able to delete a member from a data sharing group. It might not be as pretty as people want it, but at least it will do the job.
Oh, okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
The next question comes from Bob Berenger. You may ask your question.
Thanks, Jeff. I actually have two questions. The first one goes to the statement that you made about the 10% reduction in CPU path length. That's 5 to 10%, I guess, is the target. Can you comment on if you have a target and what it was expected to be with respect to specially processor offload to ZIPS and or ZAPS? And I'll let you answer that one first, and then I'll ask my second one.
Okay. With ZIPS and ZAPS, there's nothing substantial that's changed or that we're planning on changing in DB2X. It's still the three workloads that are supported today, DRDA, utilities, and parallel query. With parallel query, we're making more aggressive use of query parallelism, so we expect that for a lot of warehousing or analytics kinds of queries, that a higher percentage of the query will be eligible for ZIPS because parallelism will be used more aggressively for those queries. There's also for the parallel index update, we're exploiting ZIPS on that one because whenever you do parallelism, you're trading off elapsed time for CPU time, basically, in many cases. So for parallel index update at insert, we want to get the best of all worlds. We want the reduced elapsed time without increasing general purpose CP time. So we're going to use ZIPS to help us out there.
Okay, thank you for that. And that will bring up a second concern that I have. So as you do things that increase parallelism, you don't have to answer this, I'll just make a statement. That increased parallelism, are you putting throttles on such that we can control the degree of parallelism for the index updates? In some cases, if you have a process that's very parallelized, it can sometimes actually cause you issues if you use too much resource. You can just comment to that. My second question is, as we've moved from release to release, we've seen a trend where some CPU time and elapsed time goes into the unaccounted for bucket, and we would like you to comment on is there a general statement of a general direction that you're moving towards to limit that or to control that or so on and so forth. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, with regards to the parallel insert, the threshold that we have right now is 3. So if you have 3 or more indexes, our measurements in the labs show that you get a substantial speed up by doing it in parallel. So if it's 3 or more indexes, we'll do it in parallel. If it's less than 3, then we will not do any parallel index insert. And we do plan on supporting a ZParm for that to disable it if for your environment you find that that's not an optimal way to go. For the unaccounted for time, typically, in our experience, that's been mainly dispatching kinds of delays or paging delays in the operating system where, DB2 doesn't really have the control points to be able to track those things. And so if you have paging delays, that's happening in the operating system, and we can't really report that in our accounting records. I would take that as a requirement to be able to do that. So to be able to... As an objective, we want to be able to account for all the elapsed time inside of DB2. And so, even if there's paging delays or dispatching, whatever it might be, we would like to account for that in our accounting. So we continue to work with the operating system folks on that. The other case where we've seen unaccounted for time in data sharing environments would be something called heuristic conversions related to the CF lock structure, which we're seeing more and more now as Z10 machines and the faster machines talking perhaps to slower coupling facilities Under the covers, the operating system will convert those requests sometimes from synchronous to asynchronous, and that currently is not accounted for in our DB2 accounting. So for data sharing environments, we've seen some unaccounted for times go up because of that heuristic conversion that's happening for coupling facility lock requests, which is typically that you have a faster ZOS host compared to a slower coupling facility CPU time. And that, again, we're working to account for that. So we're working with our Poughkeepsie colleagues to be able to get feedback from them on those elapsed times as well.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The next question comes from Brian Hendrickson. You may ask your question.
Hi. I actually got three questions. First off, I noticed that this copy is going to be finally converted to Unicode, and I've kind of lost count. Can you tell me if that is the last catalog object to be converted to Unicode, or are there any left?
That's a good question. I'm not exactly sure. I think SysLogRange might be still.
Oh, okay. Okay, and then my next question is, you talked about the SPT01 compression.
Yes.
I'd like you to expand on that a little bit.
Okay.
Primarily, I'm looking at the performance aspect of compressing at the cost of CPU, versus the benefit of compressing it and getting it under the size limit.
Okay.
And so forth.
Yeah, the CPU overhead, there is some CPU, obviously, for doing some CPU overhead for compressing table spaces, including SPT01. But I think, in the scheme of things, it's probably pretty minimal because compared to a full bind operation, the cost of the compression is going to be relatively small.
Okay.
That's been our experience in running this in lab environments anyway, and I haven't heard any customer concerns. But as I said, we have a ZParm available in version 8 and version 9 that a new ZParm can say, compress SPT01. Prior to that, we had a user mod that we delivered to maybe a dozen customers worldwide to compress SPT01. And the feedback we've gotten from the user mod has been very positive. I mean, you get very good compression ratios in SPT01, and nobody's complained anyway about the CPU overhead and our lab measurements.
What has been the average compression ratio? Guesstimation is good enough.
My guesstimate would be 60 to 70%.
Oh, wow. Holy smokes. Okay. And then my last question, it's actually a composite question. You talked about the time-aware aspects of DB2X. You talked about temporal roles.
Right.
You mentioned a special date format. Is that a new data type officially?
No, it's not an official new data type, but it's an attribute on a timestamp column.
Ah, I get it. And then you talked about with those things in mind. My question, again, it goes to the performance and issue. Are those adding any significant number of catalog objects, or do they provide significant burden on any of the existing catalog objects?
No, it shouldn't. There are no new catalog objects. Except for the history, we'd have a relationship between the history table and the base table, but the catalog overhead on that is very small, so I think you'll notice little or no impact on the catalog when you use the temporal history. Obviously, when you add the timestamp columns, the row size would increase.
Yes.
So you've got those issues to
that's what my DBAs will have to worry about.
Okay, yeah, but with really the catalog, you shouldn't notice an impact there.
Right, okay. Thank you.
The next question comes from Linda Hagedorn. You may ask your question.
Yeah, this is regarding JSON 1 checker and versions in broken DBs. I'm a version 8 and I have currently over 40 broken DVDs. With RRF and version 9 and the online schema changes, I'm concerned about more breaking. Without VSM1 checker, how am I supposed to guarantee the hash of the catalog is valid before rebuilding the DVD?
Yeah, the DS1 checker looks at the validates the hashes and links inside the catalog, and DVD01 is one of those table spaces that use a hashing mechanism. In version 10, that goes away, and so there is no more hash access. There is no more. There are no more links, so we don't need DS1 checker anymore. So we can. Yeah. So the rebuild of the DVD wouldn't rely on DS1 checker anymore, but we can do health checks, you know, using the normal utilities, the normal check utilities.
When I scan DS1 for the broken DVD, if I go through the whole catalog, if I generate it and then repair DVD or diagnose. So, but a DS1 checker goes through. Doesn't it go through the catalog to guarantee the links because I have to rebuild the DVD from the catalog?
Yeah, it does go through the catalog to look at the links, but because we're removing the links in DB2X, you don't need to check the links anymore. It's just a normal relational table now, DB2X, so it becomes much simpler.
All right. Maybe I'm missing something. If the catalog links are gone, and we would previously used DS1 checker to check the link. How do I know that the hash in the catalog is okay? Because I use catalog to rebuild the DVD and the directory.
Yeah, we can just use normal check utilities to do that. And
okay. That works. Thank you.
Okay.
The next question comes from John Wychicha. You may ask your question.
Hey, Jeff. Good presentation. I'd like to comment on the active log add that you mentioned in there. Is there any thoughts about possibly being able to also provide a drain so that it can be removed or possibly resized or whatever without having to take down the subsystem?
Yeah, we're still tracking that one as a requirement. It's a little harder to do than adding an active log, and adding the active log was the, you know, 80 to 90% of what people were asking for. We're still left with the 10 to 20%, which was people would like to be able to delete or resize a log, and that one, like I said, is harder, but we'd like to be able to satisfy that requirement as well, but it's just not in DB2X.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Steve Wagner. You may ask your question.
Hi, Jeff. On page 26, under other catalog changes, you mentioned about DB2 managed catalog and directory data sets requiring DFSMS. For those sites that are contemplating converting their existing DB2 catalog and directory to SMS, should we hold off until DB2X?
I don't think there's any reason to hold off. I mean, if you go to DB2X, it would be enforced. So, you know, in preparation for DB2X, it's probably a good idea to make them SMS managed ahead of time just to make the migration easier.
So there's no special process that I would have to redo if I'm SMS managed now when I go to DB2X?
Right.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Carlos Velez. You may ask your question.
Hi, Jeff. Very good presentation. I just have a question on page 20 about the availability. You mentioned online reorg, other utility improvements. Could you expand a little on that?
Oh, other online reorg improvements. Yeah, that's on page 21. I tried to highlight the headliners in terms of online reorg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's a few of them. We didn't talk about all of them in the presentation, but they're there for your reference. And one of the more controversial ones is the ability to cancel blocking threads during the switch phase. You know, you may or may not be able to use that one, but it's been a requirement for a while, and so now that lever is available to you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
The next question comes from Hari Shamgudasan. You may ask your question.
Jeff, a couple of questions ago, someone asked about the table, changing the name of the table. And back in version 5, rename table was provided. And then in version 9, clone table was provided. But in both those cases, there were some sort of restrictions or complications in terms of, you know, dealing with triggers and things like that. And I'm wondering whether in DB2X there have been any enhancements or removal of restrictions in terms of either rename table or the clone table implementation. And additionally, whether some of the things before DB2X, which you were able to change in online schema change, like you know, the type of the columns and things like that, whether now you can make them a pending change, so that, in other words, you can do a whole bunch of things in sort of one reorg as opposed to having to do things sort of piecemeal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the existing alters, no, there's no change in DB2X. We're just addressing kind of these physical attributes that you haven't had the ability to alter in the past, and those are the ones that become pending changes. For the existing alters, like, you know, renaming a table or adjusting the size of a character column or whatever it might be, that isn't changing in DB2X. It remains the same.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Our next question comes from Frank Ziella of Highmark.
Hello, Jeff. Thanks for a great presentation this morning. Could you just detail a little more about the hash type table? You mentioned that that is not specifically an index. So is that just the method whereby you're going to find the primary key and the rest of the keys would be controlled under a regular index, or exactly how does that work?
And yeah, that's exactly right. So you specify, when you create the table space, you'd specify the hash key. And that's the way we would locate that particular key would be via the hash. But you can define, you know, indexes on other kinds of keys. If you have, you know, for example, you want to, you know, hash on product ID in a product table, then, you know, when we insert into a row into that table, we'll hash the key and then store it into the table based on the hash. And when we look up, we'll hash that key. When you do a select, you know, our product ID equals. But maybe you have, you know, queries that say on based on product name, for example, and you might want to put an index up on the name column. You can do that. You know, you define an index on any other column that you might have queries for other kinds of predicates. And, you know, we would hash on the primary key, but then, you know, use normal B-tree access for the other kinds of predicates.
Okay. And also the hashing algorithm, is that controlled by DB2? Because in the old HDAM days, you know, we would pick different hashing algorithms that, you know, reduce the number of synonyms and find an appropriate hashing algorithm for that
right key.
Now, is that all controlled by DB2 now?
Yes, it's controlled by DB2. We got a hash algorithm from IBM Research that we think works pretty well across all different kinds of column types. It's been tested for many, many different kinds of columns. We get, you know, pretty good spread for all kinds of columns that we found, all kinds of data types.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, sir, there are no further questions.
Whew. Wow. Okay, well, I'm happy there were a lot of questions. Thanks again for your attention, and I hope this was useful to you.
Thank you. This does conclude the conference today. You may disconnect at this time.